just got called up to the big league, son? Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back. The last hour of Primetime Sports for Monday, March 9th. Jeff Blair and Elliot Friedman for your listening and viewing pleasure. Tomorrow, we'll have James Hinchcliffe in studio, the mayor of Hinchtown. Bob Hartley will join us, and Stephen Walcom as well, NHL director of officiating. Well, would you call not director of officiating?
Senior.
Director of officiating.
But I freely admit I'm guessing on that. It sounds good.
He's one of the guys in charge of officiating in the NHL. Because there's a Russian working tonight. Evgeny Romasko is calling the game between the Oilers and Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy that refereed 30 games in the AHL last year, went back to the KHL, and the NHL has asked him back. So I want to hear... Oh, you told the story already about the Detroit.
Yeah, so Detroit played Montreal. It was a Hockey Night in Canada game a couple of years ago, and that was the first Swedish referee, Marcus Vinterborg.
Yeah.
So at the end of the game, all of the Detroit won, and at the end of the game, all of the Swedish players on Detroit went over and shook his hand, and Michel Therrien went googly-eyed. Like, what?
Well, I don't know how many Oilers. Well, the Oilers and Red Wings. There's a few. There'll be a few countrymen out in the ice.
Yes, there will.
A few countrymen, and my guess is they probably won't go over and shake his hand. Jim Houston of the NHL and Sportsnet joins us in Primetime Sports right now. And Jim, I want to ask you about that. A Russian refereeing in the NHL. That's pretty interesting, no?
Yeah, it means Pavel Datsyuk gets a free pass.
That's right. He gets all the calls.
Yeah, as if he needs more help.
It's probably great. I mean, I think it's much ado about nothing. I'm surprised that over the years, with the influence of Russian and European hockey in North America at the NHL level, that there haven't been more. Mm-hmm. Vinterberg came and went, but it's been primarily a North American-based talent pool. And I'm not entirely sure why that is, because, you know, they've had so much hockey over there, and the KHL has been going strong for a little while. Why haven't they produced more that would like to come over here like the players? So everything I've read about the guy is that he's a good skater. He's done really well in the American League, and this is nothing more than an American Hockey League guy who served his time getting a chance to work in the NHL. But all of us can only think about 1972 and the West German Joseph Kampala and think, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. He'll call every North American for a penalty every time somebody falls over.
How do you think Grapes is handling this?
Tune into Grape Line tomorrow.
Could you imagine a Russian referee when he was coaching? Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you could. In those days, the guys wouldn't have been able to speak English, so you could scream at them all night, and they wouldn't know what you were saying anyway.
They know certain words.
Yeah, there's some international words that they would probably figure out. So I hope the guy does really well. Yeah. And as they say, for me, it's a surprise that there haven't been more. And you know what's happening in the National Hockey League amongst the referees, and it goes back to a number of years ago when we went to two referees. It really changed things. It was like massive expansion, and they weren't ready for it. And it's taken a long while to catch up. And I don't think they've really caught up yet. And what's happening now is that some of the older guys who were at the front end of the expansion, there's still a few around in the National Hockey League who were refereeing when there was just one official. They're about to retire. And there's going to be a lot of retirements amongst referees and linesmen, whether they like it or not, in the next couple of years, and they need new guys. And if there's a pool of referees in Europe or Russia, bring them on, because they're going to need a bunch of new guys and good guys.
Paul Dvorsky, for example, I saw him last week in New Jersey. This is his last year. He got his last game. And, another example of a guy who, he was a guy who would bark back at the players, actually. Like, if you gave him too much, he'd give it right back to you. But he could really control a game. And anything you want to deepen the pool, I'm totally supportive of, 100%.
Yeah, so, and that's, look at all the players that are coming over from there. and we're just not getting any referees. Now, it's such a different game that I understand why it's a little bit different because, you know, I got to think that refereeing a game in the KHL or the Swedish Elite League is entirely different than the National Hockey League in terms of the intensity involved and the magnitude of the games, the way it's played. There's a whole bunch of different things. But here's a guy who's come over and started at the bottom and worked his way up and hope he does a really good job and can hang around.
Hey, Jim, are you surprised that Nazem Kadri will be benched for tonight's game against the Islanders after being 20 minutes late for a team meeting? And we're also, as Elliot points out, we're also led to believe this is probably not the first.
Well, Voracek sure drove the bus over.
I tend to agree with Elliot. I don't know, but I suspect if this had been the first transgression and it was only, you know, you're a few minutes late for a practice, the way things have been going, why would you run a red flag up the pole and let every media outlet have something else to have at you on? And so, you know, if this is something that's happened on a regular basis, well, he deserves it. And he probably does anyway, because this is the absolute worst time to be late for anything. With the, you know, the way things have been going with the Maple Leafs, and they've been reeling and spiraling downward out of control, there have been headlines every day about something else that has nothing to do with the game, and the games have been bad enough. So to show up late, bad timing, Nazem, really bad timing. If it was the first time, I think they'd have swept it under the rug and they would have just, you know, give him a slap on the fingers and said, don't do that again. To me, this reeks of having had enough and it's time to send a message. And it's just another one. But boy, it's just, as you said at the outset of your program today, Jeff, they are the media gift that keeps on giving.
It never stops.
Day after day after day after day. And I'm sure there's some guys in that room that are looking at the calendar and can't wait to get to the end.
Well, now it's all becoming surgeries. And nobody's questioning a guy like Roman Polak or a guy like Stefan Robida. Those guys are legitimately hurt. But it's almost like with the last guy in the dressing room, please turn off the lights. You know, every day another guy is going down for the season.
I had to look today to see who might play defense tonight. You know, with everybody out. So, yeah, it is a bare bones lineup for the rest of the season. And now, I mean, when you're in their position, if anybody is hurt, I mean, if Joffrey Lupul has even a slight recurrence of whatever it was that was bothering him, you shut him down. You shut everybody down as soon as they're even close to being hurt and can't perform unless you can't ice a roster.
Of course, as Jim knows, Jeff, I am still the undisputed champion of lateness.
I've been told that.
We would have suspended you many times, but we don't necessarily have those rules. Although
I was suspended from this radio station
in Anaheim this week. Yeah. You were on time both times we were supposed to meet.
Yes.
In fact, you were 4 minutes early for the first time, and I've never had that happen.
I'm trying to turn over a new leaf in my advanced age. You know, that's the thing, Jim, about all this. Like, okay, so there's the debate about this decision, and I always say to myself, okay, what don't we know? Now, that's the biggest question. Mm. What don't we know about what's happened here, about Kadri's history with the Leafs or not his history with the Leafs? Has anything happened? Has anything not happened? But Voracek sure blew out the door today. And, you know, you've got a decision to make with him after this season, contract-wise, too. I mean, what a grenade just got dropped into this today.
Yeah, and that's always the way with these teams that have trouble, because every time... I'm a real believer that a good team always beats good individuals. Then if you have a good team that also has really good individual players, now you've got a chance for greatness. But you know, if you can put together a group of players that will play as a team, you can beat an awful lot of teams that are supposed to be better than you, but they don't come together as a group. So it's the first job of a coach, more than, you know, X and O's, more than, you know, learning the breakout and all of that, to try and make sure you can get your group together as a team. And when things go south, as they have in Toronto and they do in an awful lot of other places, you have to start to look and see why it's coming apart and where the bad pieces are. And I'm not pointing a finger at Nazem Kadri or anybody else. I'm just saying that there are there clearly there are some things wrong that they have to sort out. And we'll be able to tell, I think, as the summer goes on, where they felt the problems were, because they're going to have to root it out and get, you know, cut it down to the basics and figure out how they can build a team and a good group of guys that can work together, because mm-hmm. it just can't go on the way it is. But you have to nip that stuff in the bud too, even at this time of year. If there has been a problem, then he has to figure it out. If you're going to be a pro, you're not talking about working on the chain gang from 7 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and mm-hmm. that, you know, just one day he was too tired to get up. He had to go to a hockey practice. Didn't have a particularly good game the night before like the rest of the guys, but showing up to go for a skate the next day shouldn't be that big a deal. And if it's happened on numerous occasions, who can blame the coach, especially this coach, who must be completely exasperated by the situation he's been put in and what it's going to do for his future too.
In conversation with Jim Houston of Sportsnet, the Winnipeg Jets and the Calgary Flames are both taking a determined run at the postseason. The Jets getting some good work from their rookie goaltender. I've got to ask you, Jim, what do you think the chances are that both these teams get in?
I'm starting to think okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we're down to under 20 games for everybody to go. Winnipeg's schedule is not bad. It's sort of half and half, home and road. I do think that makes a difference. Calgary, because of this road trip that they had that was exceptional for them with 9 of 14 points, I think,
mm-hmm.
They have more games at home than they do on the road. L.A. and San Jose are the two close chasing teams, and I really only think L.A.'s got a chance. I think San Jose's blown it. And
that was the last stand on Saturday night.
Yeah,
and they've got a tough seven-game road trip coming up. And they just haven't shown that they're that good a team. L.A., I think, is still a pretty good team, but they've slipped up on the road too, and they don't have a favorable home schedule. So, and I always, in these situations, you know, you look at the caliber of the team that's chasing in Los Angeles, and they're the Stanley Cup champions, and they've won a couple in recent years, but I really favor the teams that already have the points. It's like games in hand. Yeah, the games in hand are okay, but you haven't got the points from them yet. I'll take the points first, and I'd rather have the team that's already in and can fend somebody off than the team that's chasing. And in this case, I think those teams are playing well enough. We watched Winnipeg play in Nashville on Saturday, and that was outstanding. That's a huge gut-check win.
Yep.
Calgary seems to be able to find points. So, you know, we're at the time of year where their body of work is big enough for me to say it's not an accident that they are where they are, and they should be able to hold those other teams off. I think there's a real chance that there's three Canadian teams in the West in the playoffs.
Right, and
here, you know, here.
Well, I was going to say that don't look now, and I know you guys are aware of this, and I want to ask you both about this, but the Ottawa Senators are closing in on the Boston Bruins.
Line.
They've got Boston. They've got Boston on Tuesday or Wednesday. They're
tomorrow.
Five points back.
Yep.
What are they? They're 8-0-1. They're on a real good run. What do you think their chances are of getting that second wild card spot?
I'd love to see it. I mean, it's better for Canada the more mm-hmm. Canadian teams are in there. But the thing that scares me is not necessarily that, you know, they've got one game in hand. The other thing too is their regulation overtime wins mm-hmm. are really low. They're ahead of Florida. They're ahead of Philadelphia, who I think, you know, ended their season last week.
Right.
But they've got 26 and Boston's got 31. So not only 5 points behind the Bruins, you've got to beat them outright.
Right.
That's a tough one.
Twice.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
I think they got to beat them twice. And here again, I would say the same thing as I said about the West. I favor the team that's already got the points. They're five ahead. And that's in the three-point games now. That's a long ways ahead. It's going to be a tough task for Ottawa to do it. It's good for them that they've posed this challenge. It begs the question, where were you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where was this game when you needed it? And it's taken them a while to get there. They were helter-skelter and all over the place. And you wonder, as always, as the old Pat Gillick line about never judge a team by what it does in spring training or in September unless mm-hmm. unless they're in the race. Unless they're in a race.
Yep.
And this team looks really good that they, when they were a long ways out of it. They've come from behind. And I hope for their sake that it's not just a close finish and everybody says, whoa, weren't they really good at the end? And what if? If they make it, good for them, but it's going to be really tough. And Boston looks like they've straightened a few things out, especially this weekend. That was a huge back-to-back for them to beat Philadelphia, and they pulled that one out of the hat right at the end, and then to look really good and beat Detroit yesterday. That probably cemented it for them.
Well, and you're starting to see, too, guys like Brad Marchand and guys like that sort of reemerge again and get it going. Like, there were a lot of things you saw this weekend that you saw when the Bruins were winning, didn't you?
Yeah, and they're still not the Bruins of 2011. They're a long ways from it. Chara's been a little bit better and has got progressively better since he got hurt. Their defense is no longer as big and tough as it was. But there, you know, there's a couple of kids like Pastrnak looks like he's a player. Ryan Spooner's been playing really well in the absence of David Krejci. So there's a few good things happening for them, and there's a little help on the way. As you know, if they get to the playoffs and Krejci is back, I still don't think that they're the class of the East, but I think they're good enough to get in.
I'm just surprised. I have to admit, I'm kind of surprised at how Ottawa has taken the game out of Hammond's hands. You know, there's great reading online about the hot hand theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that. You know, does the hot hand really matter? How long do you ride a guy who's got it? There are places you can go online and just spend hours reading differing theories on that. But I have to say I was a little surprised that, you know, they took it out of his hands on Sunday. And even though they won in a frightening manner, they're going with him again tomorrow against Boston. It's interesting to me. That's the call that a coach is paid to make. It's not an easy call. You could argue either way.
There's got to be.
I'm fascinated by it.
Don't you think?
That is such a tough call because, you know, there's the other side, the people who would argue that you don't lose your job because of injury.
Right.
That, you know, Anderson, it wasn't because he was bad that he was out of the lineup. And to that point of view, you know, think about what Bruce Boudreau's got to deal with in Anaheim right now.
Mm-hmm,
you know, here's a team that thinks it can win the Stanley Cup, and they're really good. What call does he make? Is it John Gibson or Frederik Andersen? And does he change once the playoffs come? What does he do down the stretch? There's some really difficult calls to be made there. Just, you know, who knows whether Dave Cameron, you know, put the Hamburglar on the shelf by not playing him yesterday and breaks the string and all of a sudden he's no good anymore. That's entirely possible, but those are the difficult decisions that you have to make. I would tend to, as most coaches do, they forget about the goaltender, and if the guy is playing well, you just keep playing him until his legs fall off, and that's what they've done in Minnesota with Devan Dubnyk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't complicate the matter by thinking about it.
I wonder if there's a kind of a financial component to this as well in Ottawa, though. I mean, if you're paying, I quite often wonder in some markets, there's the old theory, if you're paying the guy to be your number one, the guy should be your number one. Like, I don't think you can coach that way necessarily, but I wonder if a guy like Dave Cameron feels that kind of that pressure.
But there's another side to that too. You have to determine between now and the end of the season whether Andrew Hammond is
right,
whether this is just lightning in a bottle or whether this is a guy you got to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I think, Jim, is it wouldn't surprise me if they've decided, and this is just my personal opinion, they've decided that Andrew Hammond's going to be their backup next year.
And so Robin Leonard's gone.
Or one of the two of them.
Yeah, whichever one that they can.
They want to do.
For.
Yeah.
Maybe they've done that. But you can overthink this process entirely too much,
sure,
as they
can.
Did in Vancouver, and look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they signed Roberto Luongo. Jeez, I sound like Don there.
I was going to say
Luongo to play in front of or behind Bieska for 100 years, and then decided that Corey Schneider was a better bet. And then they started to hedge their bets, and then they weren't sure. And the next thing you know, they're both gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're really convinced that a guy is good enough to sign him long term to be your number one guy, marry yourself to him, and when you get a hot hand somewhere along the line from another guy, maybe make your best deal, either sign him as a backup, but don't give him too much, or deal him when he's hot and get something for him. That's something that they can't do with Andrew Hammond right now, obviously. But once you start to stutter step and go back and forth on those sorts of decisions, it usually ends in disaster.
Right. It usually ends up in somebody being unhappy or the coach being out of a job.
Yeah, true enough. And, you know, the old saying is that show me the best goaltender in the league and I'll show you coach of the year candidate.
Yeah. Mm.
And so you marry yourself to the guy who's your best bet. Sometimes you can't figure that out. I think Bruce Boudreau's got a bit of that problem right now. I would say even if we wanted to go back to the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's one of the biggest decisions they've got to make between now and the end of the season, is whether Jonathan Bernier is the guy they thought he was when they brought him over from Los Angeles, and is he your number one going down the road? Because that is the first and foremost decision you need to make when you're rebuilding.
It's a pretty good segue into my next
now
question.
For my next trick.
My next trick. Jim Houston joining Elliot Friedman and Jeff Blair in Primetime Sports. Carey Price, it goes without saying, is a pretty serious candidate for the Hart Trophy.
I think he's got my vote.
You think he's got a lot of people's votes. But we're also seeing, I think, if you look at some of the numbers, we're seeing a historic season and a historic performance by a goaltender here. Jim, I got to ask you, if Carey Price is out of the Canadiens lineup, where do you think they finish? If they don't have Carey Price, if they've got just a replacement goalie, my guess is this team is they're not in the top five.
Maybe not in the top five. I still think they're a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can overlook some of the other performances they've had in their lineup. But you also, one goes with the other.
Right.
You know, if Carey Price doesn't play the way he has, then some of the other guys, Max Pacioretty, can't play the game that he does.
Yep.
That's part of having a team. And one of the things I really like about the Montreal Canadiens is that they are a team. They clearly have a group of guys who care for each other and play for each other. You can see it in their body language. You can see it in the results of their game. So one feeds the other. And look at the teams that have bad goaltending. Watch the Edmonton Oilers when a bad goal goes in again.
Sad.
And they get a bench shot and you can see the shoulders slump.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, here we go again. Now, if Carey Price is doing that for the Edmonton Oilers, that's a hell of a lot better team. In many ways, not just because he's stopping the puck, because it allows all the other guys to do what they do and make the odd mistake and know that they're going to be bailed out. And that happens all over the ice. It happens when you have a really good defenseman who can cover up a mistake or can make a rush and lead to a goal. It happens with the forward who can score the big goal that wins you the game. So I think it's really unfair to suggest that they're just a mediocre team with a great goaltender, because they barely had any losing streaks. Yeah. The longest one is three, and they've only had a couple of other two. They've had a couple of six-game winning streaks, a five and a couple of fours. That doesn't happen with just a goaltender. He's a huge part of it, and I would say the biggest part of it. And in the definition of the most valuable player, the guy who's the most important to your team, he is it, without question. But I don't think you undersell the other guys.
Here's another one that I believe now, too, for awards. P.K. Subban is an exponentially better defenseman now than when he won the Norris Trophy.
Oh, yeah.
By miles.
But I mean, he might not win it this year. I don't think he will.
It's going to be interesting. Like, and that's not a shot at Subban. I just think his overall game has gone mm-hmm. to two or three other levels.
Well, he's matured. Yeah. He's
learned a lot of how to use a stick.
He's learned a lot of the
how to use
satellite.
His back, like yep. his very powerful back.
He hasn't entirely run the gamut from where he was to.
But there'll always be some of that.
He still does some crazy things. He still wastes a lot of energy doing some things he doesn't have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would agree with you. He's a better defenseman than when he won the Norris Trophy. And in the last month and a half, I think he's put himself back into the conversation for the Norris Trophy that he wasn't in.
Yeah, I agree with that. 100%.
Who do you look as a front runner?
Drew Doughty.
And
even if they don't make the playoffs, when you consider what's happened to their defense, that didn't happen for the longest period of time to them, losing Voinov, Mitchell's gone, they lost Alec Martinez pretty early. So his minutes had to go up, but his performance didn't go down. And on a nightly basis, when you watch him, he doesn't lose energy. He still drives their team. It's a hard call because there are some really good defensemen around. I think Shea Weber's had a wonderful year. I think his partner, Roman Josi's had a great year. Duncan Keith. There's a few guys around that have had great seasons on defense. And Mark Giordano, before he got hurt, wouldn't want to not mention him. But for me, Drew Doughty is as good as he's been at any time and maybe better because of the workload he's had to carry. I think Daryl Sutter has been loath to play him as much as he has, but he's had no choice. And Doughty has lapped it up, and he's kept them competitive when their back end was decimated.
Good stuff as always, Mr. Houston. Always great to talk to you.
Always my pleasure. See you guys.
Take care, James.
It's Jim Houston of the NHL on Sportsnet. And
he had a great week last week, by the way. He got Anaheim.
Yeah.
And then he got San Jose, Wednesday to Saturday.
That's not bad.
That's really good.
That's actually a pretty good trip.
You know, it was. I went to the Anaheim game, and we had a big snowstorm here that day. So my wife texts me and says, "Do you want to FaceTime our son? He's asking for you."
Yeah.
So I do, and you know, it's blue skies behind me, and she's like, "Where are you?" And I don't want to tell you, hon. I really don't want to.
That's awful. It's a backdrop. It's one of those TV backdrops. Cloudy outside.
Just freaking tell me. So I told her I was at the pool, and there was a long pause, and then the pictures kind of started coming in of the driveway.
Ugh.
I did not score points that day.
No.
I had to come home. He got to stay San Jose, San Francisco the rest of the week.
That's not bad. That's a pretty good road trip.
Good road trip.
California at any time is good. You should know better than to. It's always, when you're on the road in spring training, it's always bad.
Rookie mistake.
It's always, how are things going? Windy, you know, I don't know. I had to put a sweater on this morning when I got up. Oh, my God, there was frost on the car. And, you know, the people drive so slow and they're so old. And, you don't want to, and the hotel, don't even get me started about the hotel I'm staying in. It's god awful. How are things with you, dear?
Yeah, it was a rookie mistake. She said, "Do you want to FaceTime Max?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah." So you think you're doing a great thing. And then all of a sudden she says, "What's behind you?"
Yeah.
And that's when you realize.
You got to be careful.
I'm trapped.
You got to be careful when and where you're FaceTiming.
I'm trapped. I miss spring training. That was the greatest assignment ever.
It's pretty good.
Ever.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's once you. After you get to a certain point, though, where you. Brent and I talk about this. Brent will always say to me if we're down there, "So have you reached your FQ, your Florida quota?" And I said, "Yeah, that last stop at the intersection, that 7.5-minute red light, that was my FQ."
How many days does that take?
What?
To get there. How many days are you in Florida before you get to the FQ?
A week. After a week.
That's it?
After a week, I start going nuts. After a week, I start, yeah. The weather's great, but everything's a hassle, if you know what I mean. The weather's great, but it's a hassle.
Florida. Man eats grandmother. Florida.
Exactly.
Like, it's just a weird...
Yeah, it's...
A weird state.
It is.
Weird stuff happens there.
It's very strange. Hey, the Major League Soccer got their season started. Of course, there are three teams, three Canadian-based MLS teams, Vancouver, Toronto, and the Montreal Impact. The league got started despite a threatened labor stoppage, and... as we have seen in the past couple of days, more and more details have come out about the new CBA. And as I said, it's provided kind of an interesting backdrop to the start of the season. Alexi Lalas of Fox Sports is one of the very best soccer commentators in North America. Of course, he's formerly with ESPN, just moved to Fox Sports. He will join us. We'll take a look back on the first weekend of MLS soccer. We'll talk a little about Toronto FC. We'll talk about the CBA and the big arrival on the scene of two new teams, Orlando and New York City, 60-odd thousand in Orlando to watch the teams battle it out in a, by MLS standards, a pretty testy match. Alexi Lalas will join Primetime Sports when we continue on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now everybody, have you heard? If you're in the game, well then the stroke's the word. Don't take no rhythm. Don't take.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. It is the stretch drive for Monday, March 9th. Jeff Blair and Elliot Friedman for your listening and viewing pleasure. McCown's back on Friday. Major League Soccer got its schedule started over the weekend, a little earlier, a little before that, actually. For the Canadian teams, DC United beat Montreal 1-0, beat the Impact 1-0, and Toronto FC, two goals from Josie Altidore, beating Vancouver, beating the Whitecaps 3-1. And a pretty good debut for Josie Altidore and Sebastian Jovenko, the two highly touted signings by Toronto FC. Sebastian Jovenko is just, I think Michael Bradley was man of the match, but Sebastian Jovenko is going to be something else as long as a difference maker. Yeah, as long as he doesn't get killed, that's my one concern. Might have to learn to practice a little self-preservation in this league. Alexi Lalas is Fox Sports soccer commentator. Alexi Lalas joins Elliot Friedman and Jeff Blair on Primetime Sports. Alexi, thank you so much for doing this. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the Billy Squire coming in there, sounding good, ready to go, on and off the field.
We were thinking of you when we played it. Everybody needs Billy Squire in their life.
It was beautiful. I put the windows down and I cranked it, and carpool folks were looking at me strangely. They do that anyway. But...
I was going to say, it's probably not the first time.
Yeah, that's true.
Alexi, I want to talk a little bit about the MLS CBA. Obviously, an agreement was reached on the CBA, otherwise the season wouldn't have started. We're starting to see some of the details of the CBA trickle out. How do you think the players did here? Because this is a difficult, I think in some ways a difficult CBA, because I'm just not certain how much actual, how much fungible power the players actually had here. And I don't know, I thought that when I looked at this negotiation, having a little bit of knowledge of how negotiations have gone in other sports, my first reaction was, given what we know about this league and given what we know about the growth potential, the first thing I wanted to do if I was the players was get as short a contract as I possibly could and maybe address this again. They got a 5-year deal. Yeah. Is that a victory for them?
Yeah, I think the length of the deal is certainly something they should point to with a sense of accomplishment and success, if you will. I think when it comes to free agency, and for those that weren't following it, and that's most people, the reality is that as in any sport, it comes down to money and arguing about money and how much they're going to get. From the day that this league started back in 1996 with the single entity structure, it was understood from an ownership perspective that this was going to be a gradual but constant attempt at a clawback. And from an owner's perspective, you want to have it last as long as possible under the current system, because it limits your expenditures. When you look at the free agency part of it, they got a real restrictive type of limited free agency, and in that there is a success that they can point to. But all in all, I think they recognize that they used the moment, they leveraged it to the fullest extent. But if they had gone on strike, I guarantee the deal that they signed would have been worse than what they got now. Mm. So it's one of these where nobody's happy, and maybe that's a good deal. But when you talk to some of the players and some of the teams in terms of the votes, they were not as united as certainly they made it out to be. There are a lot of players that were not happy with this and probably wanted to go to a strike. But I'm glad they didn't, from a business perspective and from a soccer perspective.
Well, you've been a player. You've been an executive. When you look at these kinds of negotiations, which hat do you wear?
I wear the hat that's going to enable this league to continue to survive and in many cases thrive. I can look at it from a player's perspective, and you want to get as much as you possibly can, but there has to be a level of maturity, and that's why the player reps are so important when they get there. And it's easy for players that aren't in that room. That's why you have these reps, is to represent your best interest. It's easy from the outside. And when you get in there and you see some of the realities of the situation, it's not easy. And sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. And sometimes you actually have to make decisions that other players might not agree with, or necessarily, well, they should understand it, because you need to explain it to them. My hope is that the dissenting voices were heard, because that is important. They are as valuable and as valued as any of the majority that's out there. You can disagree, but don't let it come after the fact where you say, oh, but I didn't think that this was right or anything like that, and nobody listened to me. You have a voice. The MLS Players Association doesn't just represent North American players. It represents MLS players, regardless of where they're from, and every player should be able to have a voice.
Alexi, I want to talk about the first weekend, but before we get there, one issue that wasn't necessarily addressed in negotiations, and I quite frankly don't know how it would come up or who would bring it up, but it's an issue of particular importance for the for Canadian players and for Canadian teams. You know as well as anybody, as per MLS roster rules, American players and Canadian teams count as domestic players, but Canadian players and U.S. teams count as international players. And for those of us who followed the league, it's always been kind of a head scratcher, since each MLS team only gets so many international slots. That would tend to make U.S. clubs more leery about signing Canadians. Are you surprised that Don Garber, who quite frankly seems to be in a lot of ways a pretty progressive guy, are you surprised that he hasn't addressed this issue?
Listen, I'm not going to claim to know every single detail of why this is in place. On the surface, yeah, it looks like something. You are a North American league, and therefore for the North American player, if you have rules that enable opportunities for American players, it should apply certainly to Canada. Canada is a huge part of Major League Soccer and an important part, and that should be reflected in the rules. Now, there are some legalities that I just don't know the details and the complexities of it when it comes to that. But you are right in terms of Don Garber and his progressiveness, if you will. It is. Look, if changing the rules is going to help make the MLS teams stronger, and in this case we're talking about the Canadian teams, then I'm all for it, because they are an important part, as I said. And if you can do things that are going to help not just Canadian teams, but also Canadian players, which in turn helps the national team, that's important, because we talk all the time in the United States about how MLS helps the national team. Is that a priority? No, but it is part of what they do, and part of, and it's a byproduct of having a successful league. And while we're in competition in an international aspect, I want Canada to improve. Canada should be better when it comes to the international game. And if by doing some of those things, we enable them to be better, that competition between us, between Canada, and obviously with what Mexico is, that only makes the region stronger, and I do believe helps MLS.
You know, Alexi, Toronto FC, as Jeff mentioned, won its opener the other day, 3-1. Yep. 8 years, never reached the playoffs. There's a lot of questions up here as to why that's happened. They've done the things fans wanted, it didn't work. They've done things fans didn't want, it didn't work. As in, someone looking at it from the outside, what do you think it hasn't worked?
Well, it's not for lack of money. We all know that, but just money doesn't solve everything. You know, I had the pleasure, and I do say pleasure, of working with Tim Leiwicki for a number of years, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, because he is big, he is bold, he has that beautiful arrogance that I talk about. And I learned a tremendous amount from him. And I say this about a guy who ultimately fired me, but I love these big, bold personalities. Now, the money that has been spent in the past, and the money that's been spent again, I love the fact that they doubled down. And they didn't crawl away after it didn't work last year and start licking their wounds. They said, look, we're going to keep making sure that we spend money to bring in players who we think are going to help us. Now, look, if Toronto doesn't make the playoffs in 2015, given the fact that they are playing in the East, all the money that they spend, the quality that they have on the team that existed, and the new quality that they brought in, they're playing in a conference now also where two expansion teams are playing in Orlando and NYCFC, then they should fire every player and everybody in the front office. There is absolutely no excuse. I've always said, though, that is the place to be, because when it hits, and it will hit, look, a blind squirrel eventually catches a nut, and a very well-off when it comes to financials blind squirrel will eventually catch a nut too. When it happens, you want to be there because of that organism, because of that community and what it's meant. And whether you're Tim Bezuchenko or whether you're a Michael Bradley, if it hits on your watch, you're going to get all the credit.
And you know, and I think one of the things, Alexi, that I think has made a difference this year, first of all, I think Jozy Altidore is probably the right guy for this team at this time. And this is frankly probably the right team for Jozy Altidore at this time in his career. But also, I mentioned Sebastian Giovinco. He just plays off Michael Bradley so well. I mean, we saw that against Vancouver. He has the ball, and he's got three people around him. And Michael Bradley's probably going to find himself with more room than he's had in a long, long time.
Yep, and you got the Josie factor and the friendship and also the understanding of that Josie has. Not only is he a big star and he scores goals, but he understands what MLS is and maybe more importantly what MLS isn't. And that's important in terms of perspective, and we've seen in the past with a guy like Defoe, who didn't quite understand what he was getting into on or off the field, and it just didn't work. Now, when we talk about Jovinko, look, this guy is quick. He's exciting. I want to watch Toronto. And this is the second year in a row that I said, I want to watch him because of these exciting moves, because of these exciting players. Now, they came out in the first game great, but we've seen this this film before where they come out great at the beginning of the season. Now we'll see how they progress. I think Jovinko is something to behold because of his quickness, because of the way he pulls into those little spots underneath. We even saw on the assist that he had to Jozy Altidore on the goal, the ability to find that little pass. I'm not saying that he's the only person that can make that happen, but when you're a big star, when you're getting paid all that money and you're a designated player in MLS, you have to consistently bring it. And whether it's Michael Bradley or Jozy Altidore or Jovinko, the other day, those designated players, you can't say that they didn't bring it. Now they have to do it game in and game out. So there is a pressure on them.
I would think that MLS was probably thrilled in some ways with what it saw of Orlando City and NYCFC, weren't they? I mean, that was, the atmosphere was tremendous. Some of the off-color comments came through from the fans. The chants came through very well in high
good
def
crowd
or in
mics,
TV.
Yeah,
they had great crowd mics. It was quite a show, wasn't it, Alexi?
It was great. 62,000 people in Orlando. And keep this in mind. You know, Orlando, what do we associate with Orlando? Well, the theme parks and this Disney.
Yeah.
And the league, just so for some perspective, when the league started out in 1996, the way it was marketed and sold was this barnification of soccer and this Chuck E. Cheese type of approach. And it was the right thing from a business perspective to sell to kids and families and all that. But that generation has grown up, and they want a much more authentic and organic type of environment. When I see those 62,000 people out there, it was important as I watched the camera pan, I wanted to see how many of them were authentic and true soccer fans, how many of them were just curious to be there. And it's going to be interesting to see what the drop-off is to the next crowd. But I tell you what, to start out, to have a great goal for Mix Discarude for New York, and then Kaká to come back, all right, with a little bit of luck, but at least to send those 62,000 people home with not a loss, and certainly to be able to see a big star like Kaká provide that winner at the end. It wasn't the perfect soccer game, but certainly they went home saying, hey, there's something here. And you mentioned the atmosphere there, all that kind of stuff with the purple over there. I was really impressed because it looked like there was a real organic and authentic type of fan there, and that is important, as you guys know, up in Toronto and as we found out in numerous markets around MLS.
We've got about a minute. Without getting us fired, what is the favorite thing that ever got yelled at you in a match?
Well, for those of your listeners that don't know, I am a proud member of the Ginger Army, and I proudly have the mutant gene, as do my two children, because each year they come out with these articles saying that the redheads are dying off, and we're, you know, a small percentage, and we're a minority, and so me and my wife have done our part to try to at least make us laugh for a few more generations. So usually it's involving something with my hair and how it relates to who I am. And it's amazing how people feel that saying something about red hair and being ginger, it's much more appropriate. They have no problem saying horrible things, at least on the surface, that they would never say for anybody else. But I take it with a grain of salt. I recognize my mutant gene. I revel in it. I recognize my soullessness when it comes to being a redhead. So it's mostly that kind of stuff we're talking about, them yelling at me.
Alexi, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing this. Be well.
You too. Thanks for supporting the game, and let's have some good stuff on and off the field from the Great White North and down below here.
We'll see that we do that. Take care. That's Alexi Lalas from Fox Sports. And, of course, his response to being called a ginger was to grow his hair as long as he possibly could. It's just one of the reasons everybody likes him. That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. James Hinchcliffe, Bob Hartley. Lots to talk about when Primetime Sports returns.